I thought I'd better tell you that the inspiration for my sermon today was Terminator 2. And the title is Hasta la Vista, Baby. It's really lovely to be with you. Thank you. So encouraging to come and we share so many incredible memories. It's also great just to be able to share so much incredible sort of experience and encouragement together. JP, of course, was, I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but it seems to happen to us for a lot, where you have somebody in the church, and they can be around the church for years. They're not a Christian, but they're, you know, a visitor. And, you know, they've heard everything that they could ever hear. And then a visiting speaker comes along and says the same thing. And just at that moment, the lights go on. The gentleman in question was, a fellow by the name of Dennis Dean. He and his wife, were met in Reading in 2001. We're out evangelizing. And Dennis and Liz of Onyinge had prayed that they would meet somebody. It's a wild prayer. That they would meet somebody with the same names as themselves. They met this couple, Dennis and Liz, which was just ridiculous. And Elizabeth came along to church and became a Christian. And her husband, Dennis, started coming a couple of years later, and he's been coming to the church now for about 5 years. And you know how it is when people just come long-term to the church? You think, oh, well, you know, it's really great to have them, but, you know, we'll just see. You know, just sort of wait for God to speak, so to, should we say. And JP was the man. And Dennis said to me after that was incredible. JP said he said something that Dennis had never heard before, which is really quite embarrassing. He says, you know, so you just got to put God first, right? So anyway, JP said that, and he decided he was going to be a Christian. And since then, we've been studying the Bible. We did a sin study this week. He's totally decided he's going to be a Christian, thinks that JP is the greatest man that ever walked on the planet since Jesus. But we do really appreciate your help. Thank you so much. Today we're going to be talking about Moses. And Moses is I think, a truly amazing character for us. Certainly for me. Title of our message we could call accept failure or choose faith. Maybe failure or faithful. So many of us here as Christians have, just through our years as disciples, have had to make many faithful choices. And we've done that, and that's why we're here today. And that, of course, God appreciates and notices that. But sometimes we feel like failures. Moses was certainly somebody, I think, who experienced that. We're going to start in Acts chapter 7. Of course, this speech right here is Stephen just before he is stoned. I think in many respects, Stephen didn't really know what an impact he was having. Sometimes for us, we don't know the impact we're having, but of course we know that the apostle, or the later to be apostle Paul, was there experiencing and hearing all of this, and it obviously had an incredible impact on him. Then we're going to have a look in Exodus chapter 3 and 4, another bit about Moses there, and then we'll finish off in Hebrews chapter 11, but let's start here in Acts chapter 7. And we read lots of very interesting things, I think, about Moses. Verse 20, Acts 7, verse 20, says, at that time, Moses was born, and he was no ordinary child. For 3 months, he was cared for in his father's house. When he was placed outside, Pharaoh's daughter took him and brought him up as her own son. Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was powerful in speech and action. You know, I wonder what Moses really would have been like as a young man. I rather picture him a little bit like maybe the Prince of Egypt, the sort of the the Yuppie, Barings Bank man of the hour. We used to, of course, give Rob Payne a very hard time about Barings Bank when they fell to pieces and pretended it was all his fault. But with the rogue trading and stuff. But a few years ago now. But Moses has so much going for him right here. He's educated, if you like, at the best, in the best place, the center of the superpower of the time. We imagine the best, so to speak, university of the time. And, you know, you wonder what Moses must have felt about being there at that time. He clearly, as we read on, we know that he was aware of his humble roots, his humble beginnings as an Israelite. But here he is, right in the middle of the royal family, shall we say, of the time. That's exactly it. It's incredible. And then in verse 23, when Moses was 40 years old, he decided to visit his fellow Israelites. He saw one of them being ill-treated by an Egyptian, so he went to his defense and avenged him by killing the Egyptian. Moses thought that his own people would realize that God was using him to rescue them, but they did not. The next day, Moses came upon two Israelites who were fighting. He tried to reconcile them by saying, "Men, you're brothers. Why do you want to hurt each other?" Now, imagine Moses right here. Really is sort of, like us men often. I can't speak for the women, but for us men, we often want to be the hero, the man of the moment. As a man, you have these dreams where you're the star of the moment. Moses is like that, and he's rescuing his brothers, his sisters, his family, his heritage. He's trying to do something about their terrible situation, and he's stepping in. He's really making a difference. I wonder when in life you feel like you're really making a difference. Maybe you have the opportunity to do something that just feel like, "Well, I'm so glad I've got the chance to do this." Maybe you have a conversation with somebody. Maybe you have the opportunity to share with somebody. Sometimes somebody goes through such a difficult, challenging time in their life, and you're there just at the right time to help them. I think Moses is rather like that. He's living this hero sort of dream right here, and he's stepping in. He's making a difference, and then he comes across a situation where it all seems to go wrong. We'll pick up straight after that in verse 27. But the man who was ill-treating the other pushed Moses aside and said, "Who made you ruler and judge over us?" Those are interesting words, those right there. They come up again and again in Moses' life. I think Moses thought that he was destined to be this great helper, this great redeemer, this great sort of a hero of the Israelites. And right there, what we have is we have people saying, "Well, who do you think you are? Who do you think you are?" Sort of thinking that you can somehow rescue us. Do you want to kill me as you killed the Egyptian yesterday? When Moses heard this, he fled to Midian, where he settled as a foreigner and had two sons. Sort of an anticlimax at the end there. You wonder really that with Moses, I'm perfectly sure that he never expected that to happen. He never expected things to go that wrong. He never expected to flee to Midian, where he settled as a foreigner and had two sons, to build his life in the desert. I wonder if for us, as we're here today, maybe we can relate to this a little bit. I certainly feel like I relate to this. It's a sense of when you think, you're really going to make a big difference with your life, and then the script doesn't seem to run quite right. For me, of course, so much of me was that about, what happened with the church, and I know many of us experienced that too, but, many people through the centuries have experienced things where they thought, "This is incredible, I got a chance to do something amazing, and then it just seemed to fall apart. You know, maybe you can remember a time in your life when things didn't work out the way that you hoped they would work out. Maybe you were left rather heartbroken. Maybe you had a relationship that didn't work out. Maybe the business opportunity, business venture didn't come your way that you hoped it would, or that promotion, or whatever it is. And you can relate to Moses right here. Yes, you think, yeah, I know what it's like to have my dreams smashed. You know, just for things not to work the way that you thought they would work. Maybe your children, you see them grow up and things don't turn out the way that you intend for them to be. And, you know, and all these things. Really here, this is the sort of the emotion, the experience that Moses has right here. Verse 30, after 40 years had passed. I think that's just meant to tell us that's a long time, all right? A long time. What did Moses do during this period? He looked after sheep. He went from being this great, if you like, sort of highly educated Egyptian to being a highly experienced sheep man, leading sheep around the desert. I wonder what he thought about over that period, over those 40 years, as he led the sheep around. I'm sure he thought a lot of the times it wasn't meant to be like this. This wasn't the plan. This wasn't what I expect. What am I doing here? You know, why am I in this desert? Why am I in this situation? And maybe he thought about God and he thought, you know, why, God, did you just desert me? Why did you leave me? Why did you forget all about me? Why is it that, you know, just that things have worked out the way that they've worked out? I think that's probably the way that he felt at that time. And an angel appeared to Moses in the flames of a burning bush in the desert near Mount Sinai. When he saw this, he was amazed at the sight. As he went over to look more closely, he heard the Lord's voice, "I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." Moses trembled with fear and did not dare to look. The Lord said to him, "Take off your sandals. The place where you are standing is holy ground. I have indeed seen the oppression of my people in Egypt. I have heard their groaning and have come down to set them free. Now come, I will send you back to Egypt." You know, at a casual glance, maybe as a less experienced Bible scholar as you are, less experienced than you are today, you would have thought, oh, well, there you are. That's God's plan. It's all coming together. See, Moses? You know, not quite what you expected, but, you know, it's all just happening. Let's get excited, Moses. Let's get back there. Let's step back on the train. You stepped off. It's all going to work out really, really well. But we know from our own experience of life, and we know from what we read about Moses, that it's not quite as straightforward as that. That when we get our dreams smashed, it's not quite so easy just to hope again. It's not so easy when you have a marriage that fails to hope again that you can actually have a great and meaningful relationship. When things don't go well for us for a little while, we can start to think, well, you know, are things ever going to work out? And I think that's how Moses is at this time. And turn back to, pick up the same account, if you like, in Exodus. Because we read really about the same thing, bit of overlap here. Chapter 3, verse 1. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and had led the flock to the far side of the desert and come to Horeb, the mountain of God. There an angel of the Lord appeared to him in the flames of the fire from within a bush. Moses saw that the bush was on fire but did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight. Why the bush does not burn up? When the Lord saw that he'd gone over, God called to him from within the bush and said, Moses, Moses. Moses said, here I am. You know, we have the same situation here. And we see Moses being, if you like, confronted by God. Amazing how God confronts us, isn't it? You sort of get happy in your situation, and then God confronts us. God confronts Moses, and he says, look, I've seen the misery of the people, and we're going to do something about it. I'm going to send you back. And verse 10 picks up really exactly from where we were a minute ago in Exodus, in Acts. Verse 10 says, so now go, I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. You know, I wonder what that would have been like, that moment of being called by God after this 40 years of silence. Do you feel like God goes silent on you? The end of the Old Testament is interesting. You know, the end of Malachi, there's a several hundred year break right there. It's like God has gone silent. Times of silence in our own lives, spiritually, when God just seems to go silent. Where is God? And of course, God is still there, and God has still got a plan. But Moses right here is battling with that. Verse 11, but Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? You know, we said a minute ago, be like, well, come on, Moses, let's go. But of course, Moses had 40 years of wandering around thinking, God, you know, why am I here? What am I doing in, what, how did this all happen? How come I've ended up here looking after sheep? This is not what I intended. We can feel like that easily ourselves. And God said, I'll be with you, and this will be a sign that is I have sent you. When you brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Of course, that is exactly what happens in years to come. It must have been amazing to Moses to be back there in the future and to remember God saying this, that actually you're going to remember this because you're going to be here one day and you're going to have all the Israelites with you. What an incredible promise. You think of something like the Great Commission. I love those scriptures in the end of the Great Commission, that line that says, I will be with you always to the very end of the age. That's an amazing promise. And yet I've had times when I felt like, well, God, where are you? I remember walking around in a park, giving God a bit of a lecture about, you know, what he'd written in the Bible and how it wasn't really true to life. That, you say you'll always be with us, but you're not with us. You'll always be with me, but you're not with me. It can feel like that. And I think that's exactly how Moses is feeling at this moment. But the point that's really to get across today is that God always has a plan. And that's a wonderful thing just to hang on to, that God always has a plan. But, you know, Moses can't come to terms with that. And verse 30, Moses said, God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me. And they ask me, what's his name? What should I tell them? You know, Moses here is starting to dredge up some excuses. You know what you're like. It's always reasons why God can't use you. I remember as a teenager being very clear that I could never... It was really at the stage now I was stunned. Well, no, I hadn't even come to the church actually at that point. But I was thinking about my life. And I'd got rather disillusioned with my course, my veterinary... My veterinary course. God was clearly working, but the idea of handing my life over to God seemed incredibly challenging. And I remember saying to God, "You know, I'll be a Christian if I can still be a vet, and more specifically, if I can still be a horse vet." And then I, a little while after that, I came to the church. I went to this first service down in Lambeth North, and I remember this discussion about how you can't put God second. And of course, I knew that was exactly, on the surface, you know, I was a very sort of, you know, good guy, you know, I was president of the Christian Union, all these sort of things, as if that really stood for anything. I was finally defrocked, actually, in Muswell Hill up here, which is years later by a veterinary lecturer who told me that I would no longer be allowed to hold a position of responsibility in the Christian Union, and nor would anybody in the UK who had anything to do with our church, all right, which was an interesting conversation. But that's another story. But, you know, on the surface, things can look really good. On the surface, you can appear like you're, you know, a good, church-going, righteous sort of person. But God isn't first. And that was my issue. That was exactly where I was at. And I thought, and I'll have these discussions with God. Well, you know, I'll be a Christian if I can do this, if I can do that. You know, whenever you're making conditions, you're putting God into second place. You're saying, God, I'll follow you if I can do my number one thing. And that just defined me completely. And I used to have these conversations with God. I said, well, you know, you probably plan for me to do something like, you know, be a church minister or something. And I'll be terrible at that because, you know, I can't even read. You know, I always tell the teens when they're doing their exams, you know, it took me, do you remember, you know, O-levels, GCSEs? Took me four times to get my English GCSE, you know. It was like a major challenge. If you've got problems, I had greater problems, you know. But I remember just thinking, you know, I can't even read. I'm such a clumsy person with language. God, I could never, you know, do anything, but I could be a great horse vet, you know. You know, that would really be good, you know. And I'll be a Christian if, you know. And we limit ourselves. We think that, you know, somehow Moses said, I can't do this. What about if they say this? What about if they say that? And we're forgetting about the power of God. Moses is forgetting about the power of God. So God says, you know, basically, hey, you know, no problem. And he goes on, verse 21, I love this scripture, says, I'll make the Egyptians favorably disposed towards his people, so that when they leave you, you'll not go empty-handed. Every woman is to ask his neighbor and any woman living in her house for articles of silver and gold and for clothing, which you'll put on your sons and daughters, and so you'll plunder the Egyptians. Stunning, really. God's just really laying it on. It's going to be all right, Moses. It's going to be incredible. It's just really going to happen. I'm going to make sure that everything works out really, really well. But Moses carries on. Chapter 4, verse 1, Moses answers, what if they do not believe me or listen to me? And say, the Lord did not appear to you. You know, I mean, it's a bit like, you know, imagine they say that you just dreamt all this up. You know, you think maybe sometimes, can I really be effective in helping somebody to become a Christian? That's an important thing for us as Christians, that we really keep confident about. It's not about us, it's about God. God can use us to help people to become Christians. It's not about us not having the right. God can guide people into our lives. And sometimes you think, yeah, but it's been so long. But that's not really an excuse or a reason for thinking that we can limit God. God still has incredible plans. You know, there's a lot ahead, which is just so exciting. And then in verse 10 of chapter 4, Moses said to the Lord, Lord, I've never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since. You've spoken to yourself, I'm slow of speech and tongue. The Lord said to him, who gave man his mouth? Who made him deaf or mute? Who gives him sight or makes him blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will help you. I'll help you speak, and you will and will teach you what to say. Verse 13, one of the great verses of the Bible. Moses says to the Lord, oh Lord, please send someone else to do it. Isn't that great? Isn't that just a great verse? Let's get, you know, the real issue is, I really don't want to go. I do not want to do this. I've tried in the past. It's gone wrong. You know, I got really hurt. I've sort of settled my life down now. I'm looking after sheep. I'm all right. I'm just okay here in the desert. I've just built up a little dream of what I can do here, and let's just leave it at that. You know, when we have our dreams smashed, I think it's really hard to dream again. It's true for me. It's something that's so relevant for me as a disciple, as a Christian. It's just, you know, the heart of dreaming and really wanting great things, and then things don't work out, and our dreams get sort of smashed. It's like that feeling when somebody really close to us leaves the Lord. You know, it just really can be so devastating. I remember the first time that happened to me. Somebody I'd poured life and soul into and spent so much time with, and I thought we had such a great friendship. He could never leave God. And of course he left God, because it wasn't really about my friendship. It was about his relationship with God, not my relationship with him. And it really devastated me. It really, really got me. I thought, oh, I don't know if I really want to help anybody else become a Christian, because it's so painful. It's so painful seeing somebody become a Christian and then see them turn their back. And I just really don't want to get my hopes up again. I remember once I got through that, I was busy studying the Bible with one of my neighbors in the hall of residence I was living in. And I really loved this guy, and I used to spend lots of time with him, and I used to pray and fast for him and all kinds of stuff. And he said to me one day, I've decided I don't want to be a Christian. I was devastated. It really, really knocked me. And I felt like, gosh, I don't want to get my hopes up. My hopes were so high. I thought, he's going to become a Christian. And my hopes got smashed. And then to keep on hoping, to keep on faithfully dreaming of God doing incredible things in my life was just such a big challenge. And, you know, it's amazing. It's just been the story of my life. Really, in many respects, the story of every mature disciple's life, I think, is that we have great dreams. And they, just like Moses' dreams, they appear to get smashed, and you just feel like, oh, I don't want to do that. Don't get my hopes up. I hoped before, and, you know, it didn't work out. And I think that's exactly where Moses is at right here. You know, it really helps me. The passage helps me no end, because it's so great to think that Moses is such a great guy. You know, if you ask people, what sort of guy was Moses? Oh, incredible man of God. And yet here the same guy is saying, I really don't want to do this. Send somewhere else, you know. I just don't want to do it. But he's not remembered by that. Maybe when you think of your own life, you think, oh dear, some of the things I've said and thought, and you know, there's definitely no hope for me. It's just not true. Actually, you know, it's amazing how God will use us even regardless of, you know, of what we've been through. I always treasure it when studying the Bible with, you know, much like I am at the moment with Dennis Dean, Dennis Bongingen, myself, studying with him. And it's so amazing to think that God has an amazing plan for each of our lives, for this man, Dennis's life. That, you know, God's going to work. It's God's still there. God's teaching us. But God is still working. And here's Moses. And God says, I'm going to do great things. Turn to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews 11 is fun, because it's all about faith. And I think especially for us Christians, it's incredibly encouraging.